Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Thank you.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank a three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you... Sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done.
Hmm.
I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their.
Bye. And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show me your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
He's saying no. He's saying we fought for every one of them towers. We give it up now when Marcus is weak. He's saying if we do this, Prop Joe would have it over us, and we might never get out from under.
We don't have the product or the muscle.
I told him.
I did. He says he's still trying to find us a better connect. And for muscle, he's saying he's sending us the best he can find. Brother Muzon.
He's sending him, brother?
From New York. Coming down to work on retainer. For as long as we need.
Brother Muzon.
Yep.
You fucking with me, Ray? Brother Muzon. From NYC.
I went to Avon and told him I didn't have enough muscle to hold down them towers, played it like that.
Yeah, and he reached out.
Yo, I'm still holding on to this deal. You know what I'm saying? This is just some shit that we got to deal with.
Deal with how?
My nigga, I would take the motherfucker out if I could, but Avon can't know it came from his own people, right?
You don't think I'm going to send any of my people up against brother? Shit. That nigga got more bodies on him than a Chinese cemetery.
True.
Look, I'm just saying... This your problem, not mine. You want my product. You need to deal with it.
All right, so listen, we got some time here. All right? Avon got to send up word, wait for word to come back, set up a price, talk to Brother Muzon. I mean, set up the whole shit, and that's like a week or maybe two. And by that time, your people's going to be in the towers. And if the money's right, then that is what it is. Ain't no nigga from New York going to change the facts from the ground. All right?
sir.
Trending topics, anything you guys want to talk about, if you want to talk about something, we can chop it up on any topic. If not, we'll adjourn early. So here's what I've got for you, though. You know I'm into statistics, and I think it's a good way to see clearly the chessboard or whatever topic that you're talking about. Today, we're going to briefly speak on Club 14%. And I'm going to link it on to what we were talking about yesterday, which was we were talking about Black Wall Street reparations. We were just talking about that just that one within the reparations conversation, that one particular niche market of reparations, you know, should the I'm assuming that the three people that were alive last year, and they were all over 100 years old, So hopefully they're still blessed and still alive now. But should those three get it, I say if anybody deserves reparations for Black Wall Street, it would be those three. But anybody after that, they weren't around back then. But that's my take. So anyway, I'm linking that the whole reparations thing to Club 14%. And what is exactly Club 14%? Well, I just ran across this statistic today, this morning, early this morning. It's updated. In the past, I've said that 75 to 80% of the population of the United States occupies 3 to 5% of the landmass. Now, let me update that. 86% of the population of the United States occupies 3 to 5% of the available landmass. What's left over is 14%. 14% of the population of the United States essentially has access to 95%. 95 to 97, let's put it at 95% of the available land that's out here in the United States. On the scrolling marquee that I have on today's live stream, I have two pictures. One, it shows you, out of 100%, what 14% looks like. And then the other picture is a lady out in the field and with a silhouette of a cow, says go rural. The 14%, that represents the population of the United States that are rural. These are people that live in a rural environment. And because there's, once again, 86% of the population of the United States, that's a lot of people, live on the grid. Now, you got some people in the 14%. There's some grid out there, too, but there's a lot of, but you do have quite a few people out of the 14% that are just totally off the grid. Now, I did a little checking, and I'm going to do more on this, probably not during this podcast, but in future ones you'll hear it. All right, so 86% of the population of the United States lives on the grid. Only 14% of this country lives rural. And I believe in a rural environment, that's when you can get ahead of the pack. That's when, provided you have the skill set to live in a rural environment. But that can be learned. Okay. Anyway, so I'm just skipping around to, let's say, in Kenya. Now, Kenya, 72% of the population of Kenya, they live rural. They live off the grid. And then in my opinion, I would call Kenya more of a developed country than the United States, which might sound totally crazy to most people that just heard me say that. Because here's how I'm looking at it. Matter of fact, let me say why I got it on my mind. If you've got to borrow, put it this way, credit and banks are essentially for poor people who don't have the cash or the skill set to buy a home and or build one. I think this whole, the term developed country is an okey-doke term, but that's just me speaking. 72%, and see, because what I'm looking at is 72% of the citizens of Kenya, they live in a rural environment, but they don't have these crushing student loans for the most part. You know, they're not trying to make a car note. Now, of course, now if you go to some place like Nairobi in Kenya, they have a grid. And you got people struggling there too, but in a rural environment, people live simpler. You know, they build their houses using social capital. Why would you ever need to go to Wells Fargo or Bank of America or any bank, commercialized, regulated bank, if you've got ample social capital? So anyway, while the United States, only 14% of our population lives rural, 72% of the people of Kenya live in a rural environment. Going, skipping over, and we're still in East Africa on this one. Uganda, 75% population of Uganda, they live rural. They live out in the country. You know, you got people in Kampala. Kampala's on the grid. There's, you got some people struggling there, but 75% of Uganda lives in a rural environment. Now, let's get back over here to the United States. Once again, now, you've only got 14% of the population of the United States that lives rural, but they're on 95% of the available land mass. And one of the reasons why I like rural is because here in the United States, because number one, there's dramatically a lot less competition. Number two, is dramatic. I just paid property taxes on within the last 10 days, I paid property taxes on two of the properties that I have. Land properties. And on one, on the 4-acre property that we have here in Florida, and I was late paying it, I paid, I'm going to put it at $173. It was like something like $172 and some cents. But I'm going to put it at $173 for 4 acres. That's for the tax bill for the whole year on that 4 acres. And I was late paying that. But I paid it, though, because I didn't want to get it. I don't want to have that go up for a tax sale auction. And then the other property was on 10 acres I have in Texas. And I paid. Now, I was late on that. I'm going to start paying these bills like in October when the bill comes in. But I was late paying that, and on that 10 acres, I paid $38.50. Why did now, in other places where I have property, which are in densely populated cities here in the United States, the property taxes are like really crazy, $5,000 a year, stuff like that. So where the action is, in my opinion, and let me link this to the people that are, you know, in favor of reparations. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not into it for that, but a lot of people are, is while you're waiting for reparations on the grid, wherever you live on the grid, okay, where the action is right now, where you don't need any legislation, you know, when you don't have to vote people into office, you know, when you don't have to, you know, what's this reparations bill? With, I don't know, HR or something. If somebody knows that bill number for reparations floating through, what that's been floating for, you know, hold, let me look that up now. been floating around Congress. I want to see how long it's been floating around Congress. Reparations bill. Once again, if you know it, 61 bill HR. Let me see if it comes up. HR 40. Okay, HR 41. All right. How long? And that's just a bill to study reparations. Let me see. HR. Let me see if I can get a Wikipedia on this. But, yeah, a lot of you people that might be struggling in the city, if you want to get ahead of the pack, go rural. Go rural. Now, if you want to go visit your friends, relatives, hang out in the city, entertainment, go to work, that's fine. But for the roof over your head and to get ahead of the game, because in a urban environment, I mean, more than likely you're renting your water, you're renting your electricity. Get your skill sets up for rural living where you no longer have to rent electricity. Go solar or go wind or go both. Go renewable, you know. Drill a well or harvest rainwater or do both. Start renting municipal water. Stop renting municipal utility services. And the best place to do it right now, I don't know what it's going to be like 10, 15, 20 years from now, is going rural. That's right here in the United States. And when you go rural, in my opinion, that's when you discover the real United States. The real United States is not Chicago, D.C., L.A., none of those places. Not by my metrics. I have a different set of metrics probably than most people. Okay, I'm not finding. Okay, wait a minute. I think I found it. All right, reparations, slavery. Reparations for slavery, anticipation of the kind, reparations of victims of slavery. And or their descendants. See, it's the and or descendants. I think that's a hard. How can you prove in 2022 that you have been injured? You know what? Let me throw it out there like this. Kunta Kinte, if we take, because Roots was, let's take that as an example. Kunta Kinte was snatched from his homeland. He got his foot chopped off. So let's say he was injured twice, way back whenever that happened. Okay, Matt, you know what? Hold up. Let me see if I can get a timeline on Kunta Kinte. All right, Kunta. And you guys can chime in on it if you want to. Kunta Kinte timeline. Okay. Kunta Kinte. He starts his manhood training March 23rd, 1765. Okay. I believe he was born January 1st. 1750, and he lived till December 31st, 1810. Okay. So, let's do a little arithmetic here. It's 2022 right now. Oops. All right, 2022, and he transitioned in 1810. That's 212 years ago. So if there are any descendants of Kunta Kinte, or even in your bloodline. Now, he was kidnapped. Let's call that an injury. And his foot was chopped off. That definitely was an injury. Then he was whipped, and, you know, your name is Toby. And they broke him. All that's injury. Okay. But the clock was over with him in 1810. So it's 212 years later right now, in May 17th, 2022. Now, first thing, if you're not 212 years old right now, you don't qualify. That's just right off the bat. And then here in 2022, and let's say you are a direct blood descendant of Kunta Kinte, how have you been injured in your lifetime to the point where you, as a direct result of what happened over 212 years ago? Now, in order to prove that, okay, now this is not my metrics. In a court of law, you're going to need probably a doctor's examination, a physical doctor examination. You're going to need probably a psychological examination. When Kunta Kinte was alive, there was no internet. You got so many blessings or opportunities that he never could even conceive of 212 years ago. So you would have to prove how you were injured or how your life has been injured today based on what happened 212 years ago. Now, while you're doing that, I'm just putting this out here. Man, go rural. While you're waiting on, wait a minute, how long is this bill? I don't know how long H.R. 40 has been floating around. Now, hold on, let me look it up. Reparations, okay. H.R., let me see. Reconstruction 2020. Okay. H.R. 40. And if somebody knows, let me know. How long has H.R. 40 been floating around? Let's see. H.R. 40. All right, H.R. 40, Commission to Study and Develop Reparations Proposals for African American Act. Okay, so H.R. 40, all it is going to be a study that makes some recommendations. That'll be interesting what the recommendations will be because... All right, here it is. Summary. H.R. 40 would establish a 15-member commission to study the effects of slavery and discriminatory policies on African Americans and recommend appropriate remedies, including reparations. Like, we haven't had a gazillion... I mean, affirmative action. It's so, anyway. Oh, the reparation pimps, that's what I call them. But in any event, while you're waiting on all that, I highly recommend go rural. It's, once again, it's not for everybody. I mean, because why so much of the American population, 86%, cramming into this 3 to 5% land of, you know, of the landmass? And it's because we as Americans, and Westerners to a high degree, we are addicted to the comfort and conveniences of city life. We don't have to know how to grow our food. Thus, most Americans, or most people that live in Western countries, they don't know how to feed themselves unless they have government-issued legal tender, which I call glorified food stamps. They don't know how to grow their food. They don't know how to catch their food. They don't know how to harvest their own water. The commute time, they don't want to spend no more than maybe 30 minutes to an hour on average to find a job that will pay them a livable wage, you know, to live on. So we Americans, or Westerners in general, just down to people in the United States, so you got people in Canada, Europe, and we want things as convenient as possible. As convenient as possible. One of the reasons why New York City, year in and year out, has the largest population in the United States and one of the largest populations for a city proper and metro area in the world is New York City offers probably more comfort and convenience than any other city in the United States. And there's over 19,500 towns in the United States. New York City is only one of them. But, man, do they offer some comfort and conveniences. You can go to New York City right now, and you don't have a place to stay. There are a bunch of places that you can go to and get into a shelter. Now, you might not like the living conditions in those shelters, but I'm just saying, some people do. They love New York City. And they know the system. They know how to get into these shelters. And some of them, it's their lifestyle. That's one of the comfort and conveniences of New York City. I've heard from people that you know what, if, let's say you're in New York City and you want to make it back to Seattle, Washington, or I don't know, Nome, Alaska, or whatever. They have some agencies there that, you know, if you know how to play the system, they'll give you a bus ticket out of town. So New York City, that population is there because, you know, you don't have to chop down trees for firewood. You don't have to worry about building your house. They got plenty of rooms, plenty of apartments, plenty of houses, Section 8 housing. God knows a myriad of social programs. Well, it's all right there in New York City. Now, if you go to upstate New York, where, you know, you do have a lot of, not wilderness areas, but rural areas, it's a different kettle of fish. You know, the subway's not going to be in rural upstate New York. The bus system that you know in New York City is not going to be in upstate New York. You know, now, you can go to Buffalo, New York, where they just had those mass shootings over this past weekend. Buffalo, New York, it's affordable there. However, in Buffalo, New York, you can get a big house for a reasonable amount of rent. However, when winter sets in Buffalo, New York, if you don't have the sufficient amount of income, because if your house isn't properly insulated in Buffalo, New York, because it gets pretty cold up in Buffalo, New York. However, you know what? Man, just hop on a bus or find your way back to New York City, and you don't have to worry about any of that. Now, once again, if you know how to play the system, playing the system, that's a skill set too. I don't know how to do it, but there are plenty of people that do know how to play it. And if you look at the largest cities around the world, the common denominator from at least my study of them is the largest cities around the world, like Mumbai, Sao Paulo in Brazil, Mexico City in Mexico. Your largest cities around the world, and I'm talking about huge mega cities like New York City, typically you'll find more social programs and more comfort and convenience than you will in rural areas. Because like in India, culturally speaking, in some parts of India, the groom, there's not going to be any wedding unless the groom can provide a toilet for the family. That's something that we take for granted here in the United States. But in India, maybe not in all of India, but maybe not in all families and weddings, but in some cases, the groom, hey man, you can marry my daughter if, you know, you can get a toilet installed in this house. Right, so it's a different ball game, you know, different parts of the world or what have you. So, yeah, the 14% club, or club 14% as I call it, I think if you look at it, you know what, let's take a place like Chicago. Chicago's got over 3 million people, and you got your share of people that are struggling in Chicago. And take the people that are, you know, these shootings that happen in Chicago. I don't know what the percentage is. You got to figure some of these shootings happen because of economics. You know, somebody's not making enough money. Some guy got an argument over money. You know, what have you. But if they would just drive 45 minutes, just a 45-minute radius of, I'm going to say Cook County. Chicago is in Cook County, but I'm going to just say that all of Cook County. Drive a 45-minute radius of Cook County and find yourself a rural area. You can find a whole new world of sustainability. Now, with that said, you would have to, if you don't have the skill set, you can develop the skill set to sustain yourself in those places. And, you know, let's say a 60-mile radius of Chicago, 60 miles, all right, an hour outside of Chicago radius, you can still work in Chicago, visit friends and relatives in Chicago, do whatever you want to do in Chicago, but for sustainability purposes, meaning the roof over your head and that type of thing, just food for thought. So the 14%, there's a lot of 14%. There's a 14% around all these larger cities that have a lot of these social programs. Meanwhile, now, or you can stay there and you can march, you can protest, you can... like in Evanston, Illinois, they've passed their version of, what do you call it, reparations. But I still say, look at an hour radius, 60-mile radius of Evanston, Illinois, find yourself a rural county, find yourself a county that's mostly rural, and typically the cost of living, but once again, you need to have the skill set. But that, you know, that can be developed. That can be developed. If you're not, you know, us, we Americans, we're addicted like crack addicts to comfort and convenience. We just have to have it. We demand it. The Amish and the Mennonites, their communities basically, and I'm not saying you have to become Amish Mennonites, but they're in rural, you're not going to see any, if you see an Amish person or a Mennonite person in Chicago, L.A., New York City, and you do, they're there visiting. Look at, and this map's right on the internet, you know, look at where these Amish and Mennonite communities are in the United States. They're not in Manhattan, New York. You're not going to find any no communities in the Loop in Chicago. You know, you'll find them in the state of Illinois. You'll find them in California, the state, but you're not going to find them living as a community, setting up a household in Los Angeles, California, Seattle, Washington, no. They typically gravitate to the rural areas for living, and then they'll come into the grid with a farmer's market, and they'll sell you city folk fresh foods and whole foods and that type of stuff, you know, just to get the dollars they need. But they don't live. They don't live in those areas. We'll be back in a minute.
I say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass, high as hell, and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family gonna live in there? Is they gonna? I'm gonna get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
Well, the one thing that I wanted to highlight, because I think it's very, very critical to look at, and that is the disparity in wealth ownership between so-called African Americans and white people. The disparity in wealth ownership. We have to understand something, and Neely Fuller does an excellent job of discussing this, even though he's not a psychologist by training, from my understanding, but he does a good job of talking about psycholinguistics and how the words that are used shape your interpretation of your reality. The white man is master in coming up with words and then using those words to impact the way black people perceive our reality. For example, one such concept is middle class, the black middle class. There is no such thing as a black middle class. Class is a Marxist concept, a Leninist Marxist concept that relates to ownership of the means of production. In order to be middle class, you must have access to and control over corporations and institutions. Class is about wealth. What do you own in terms of resources, land, businesses, stocks, material wealth? That's what class is about. Black people don't own a damn thing. We don't have class. We simply have black people who make a little bit more money than other black people. But that does not put them in a different class. When you look at poor white people and you look at the white middle class, what makes the white middle class separate from poor whites? It's because they own things and they are able to live off of residual income. The average white middle class person has investments that allow them to get paid even while they're not working. That's what makes them middle class. They own wealth. If you look at the average white person's assets, in fact, the current census that was done said the average wealth of a black middle class home, middle class, is about $5,000. No wealth, but cash in the bank, $5,000. The average wealth of a white middle class home is more than $100,000. You're looking at a $95,000 just minimally. Probably worse than that.
Brother Umar.
Yes, sir.
I just wanna be clear about what you just said. Did they say that $5,000 a week?
No. $5,000 in total assets for that home.
$5,000.
In other words,
like,
if you add up, yes, if you add up what the family is worth, add up their net worth, that's land, property, investment, stocks, add it up, and the average black home is at $5,000 U.S.
Damn. And that would qualify
almost
middle class?
And that can qualify. Well, the $5,000 doesn't qualify you for middle class, but that's how much wealth the average black middle class person has.
Average black. Okay, all right, I'm clear now. Okay.
So in other words, the average black middle-class person is making more money, they're making more money than the poor black, but they don't have more saved up than the poor black. Because as you know, the more we make, the more we spend. So for example, if I'm a working-class black, I might have a $20,000 car note. But the minute I get an $80,000 job, I want me a Benz. So I went from a $20,000 car to a $80,000 or $90,000 car. Only make $80,000, but because I'm middle class, I feel like I have to look the part. So we end up spending even more money on excess materialism. So when you look at how much money the poor black person has saved and how much money the middle class person has saved, it's about the same amount of money. In fact, there was a study that said that the average black middle class, we ain't talking poor, we talking so-called middle class blacks, is two paychecks away from poverty. The average middle class black family, because of their house and their car and all the expensive stuff that they have, all the credit cards, could survive a month. On the flip side, the average middle class white family, because that's true class, they have wealth, the average middle class white family could live at least a year if they were laid off of work. At least a year before they would have to start being concerned about how they're going to keep a roof over their head. 12 months. Black person, 1 month. There's no such thing as a black middle class. And let me say this. Look at how they define class. In America, class is defined only by two things. How much money you make isn't one. I want to be clear about this. I want to make sure the listeners are clear. How much money you make has nothing to do with your class category. I want to be clear about that. The only two things they look at is how much education you have and your occupation. Where do you work? Let me repeat this. How much education you have and where do you work? So let me give you an example. You have a doctorate degree in education. A doctorate degree in education. But in your school district where you work at, all the white people control all the upper echelon jobs, the middle management jobs, the principal jobs, the administrative jobs. They're all controlled by white folks and a couple of token Negroes. So the fact that you have a doctorate degree did not earn you more money because there's no positions in your school district to which you can graduate to. So you have a doctorate. You're still a school teacher. You're raising three or four children, possibly by yourself, which is a situation many of our sisters are in who are educators. So you're raising two or three children by yourself. You're a school teacher. You have a doctorate degree. Because you have a doctorate and because you're a school teacher, you're going to be considered probably upper class with your doctorate. Your doctorate degree makes you upper class or at least upper middle class on paper. But in reality, the situation is what? Because you're only making about $40,000 in your job, and that growth, not net, your take-home pay is less than $20,000 a year, and you're raising three or four kids, despite having a doctorate, despite being a teacher, your take-home pay is equivalent or less than a black person who's considered to be poor. An impoverished black person has the same take-home pay as many so-called upper-middle-class black people. It is the illusion of progress. The same amount of money they have to spend is no different than a poor black person. They're identical in terms of actual net pay that comes home. But because they have a doctorate and because they're a school teacher or a physician or an engineer or a counselor or a school nurse, okay, they're automatically considered middle class when the truth of the matter is they're just as broke as the people in the ghetto. Now, okay, we saw the spending report for black people, and I think this was the 2011 spending report. 2012's might not be out yet. For 2011, they said black people spend more money on more time on the Internet, more money on the cell phone, more money on cell phone minutes, more money on Internet minutes. So we are clearly dominating in the, what do we call that, World Wide Web markets. Now, yes, the interesting thing that the report pointed out is black people are different in one major way than every other consumer in America. Two ways. The first way is we are conspicuous in our consumption. We buy stuff not because we need it, but because it is available. This was one of the biggest findings of the study. Black people will buy it just because it's new. In other words, you have an iPhone 4. Nothing's wrong with your iPhone 4. But a commercial just came out that there's an iPhone 5. So you're going to go out and spend $400 on an iPhone 5. That's only slightly different than the iPhone 4. And why are you buying it? Because you need it? No. You're buying it because it is available. The study said black people, everyone else, most Americans buy things when they need it. They said black people buy it just because it's available. This is what white folks are saying. Put it out there and the niggas are going to buy it. And then they said that black people, more than any other people, what they own seems to reflect their own estimation of their self-worth. Look at that. What they buy. For most people, what they buy does not reflect their self-worth. But for black people, what they buy reflects their self-worth. That's taking us back to post-traumatic slavery disorder. That's taking us back to low racial self-esteem. It's saying the reason why we got a million pocketbooks, a million cars, a million pairs of sneakers, shoes, clothes, jeans, whatever we into, the reason why we have it is because on a subconscious level, we feel worthless. And so we buy all the material garbage as a vicarious way of adding value to ourselves. In other words, Look at what I'm driving. Look at what I'm wearing. We use that to add worth to us. You see it in the schools with our children. Our children do never debate over what they know. They never debate over who they are. They only debate over what they own. Public school is nothing but a what? Fashion show where black children go and compete with other black children for how much they are worth based on what they are wearing and based on what they own. This is what we have created, a whole generation of babies who don't know how to do anything but buy what white people make and then use it to look better than the next black person.
Black folk in America, and not all black folks alike, but let me read out some statistics here on what I call Club 14%. Club 14% is the percentage of the population that live on just 5% of the landmass. Now, I got some statistics here. Because while Umar's trying to, you know, reach black folk on the grid and struggling all this other stuff and reparations. All right, let's look at rural areas around the United States. Okay, number one, Maine. The rural population of Maine is 61.3%. 61%. 61.3% of the population of the state of Maine don't live on the grid. They live out in the country. Now, here's an even more telling statistic with the state of Maine. The rural land area of Maine, 98.8%, I'll repeat it again, 98.8% of the land in the state of Maine is rural land. It's interesting that you haven't heard any, you know, all these shootings of black men or black people that we hear every 3 or 4 months or whatever. You don't hear anything coming out of Maine, do you? Just saying. Go country. Number two, Vermont. I love that state. Matter of fact, I like it better up there than I do. I'm in Florida. 61.1% of the population of the state of Vermont lives in a rural situation. Now, I've been to Vermont twice so far for tiny house events, and it, which is always held off the grid. And, I mean, where they had the event where I went, you couldn't even pick up a cell phone signal or nothing like that. But 61.1% of the citizens of the state of Vermont live in a rural environment. But here's the telling statistic out of Vermont. 98.3% of the landmass of Vermont is rural. Plenty of land up there. Let's go to number three, West Virginia. I was probably in West Virginia about 6-7 years ago. Anyway, 51.3% of the citizens of West Virginia live in a rural environment. And here's the telling number, 97.3% of the landmass of the state of West Virginia, it's rural. 97%. Let's drop down south. Number four, Mississippi. 50.7% of the citizenship of the state of Mississippi live in the country, in a rural environment. But here's the tell you want to get rich? Let me use the word wealthy. Okay. Go to Mississippi. 99.8% of the available land in the state of Mississippi is rural land. Forget about Jackson and Biloxi and those places. Go out into the rural areas, you know, pick up some new skill sets and go from there. Now, would a majority of people do it? No, because, like, the average crackhead is not going to get all crack until they bottom out. In my book, being addicted to city life and being a crackhead is one and the same. Neither one of them can pass judgment on either one of them because they're both mass consumers. All right, number five, Montana. 44.1% of the population of Montana, Big Sky Country, live in a rural environment. And 99.8% of the available landmass in Montana is rural. Now, let me throw out a city, the city that I was born in, the city that I still have a house in, Washington, D.C. There's no rural land in Washington, D.C. Everything, the whole city of Washington, D.C. is on the grid. So they got Rock Creek Park there and whatnot, but that's not rural. That's within the city of D.C. There's nobody living on an acre of land. Well, there is an institution, St. Anselm's Abbey. They have 40 acres in a little quiet area of northeast D.C., which most people don't know about. But you're not going to – if you go online or call a real estate agent and say, look, I'm looking to buy acre land, you're not going to find one in D.C. There's no rural areas in Washington, D.C. whatsoever. Manhattan, New York, which is 12 miles long and 3 miles wide, there's no rural areas there. I mean, you got Central Park, but that's not classified as rural. All right, next one, number six. This is where Pleasant Stephens is originally from. 43.8% of the population of Arkansas lives in a rural area. 97.9% of the available land mass in Arkansas is rural. Number seven, South Dakota, 43.4% of the population. Oh, and mind you, Trayvon Martin didn't get shot in none of these states. Eric Garner, you once again, all the madness. Well, you got crazy crimes that happen in rural areas too. There's rural crime. But none of these places that I'm talking about statewide hit the news. If I was a black, and I am black, go rural. Go these states that I'm naming. Go to these states, buy you some land on it. But you know, that's where you can get your 40 acres. You're not gonna get it from the government, but go to any one of these states and you can get your 40 acres. You're gonna have to pay for it, but it's not gonna cost as much as you think it might cost. Or you can wait to see what happens with H.R. 40, and all H.R. 40 is a study. That's all that is. Okay, anyway, Arkansas originally with plus 97.9% of available landmass in Arkansas is rural. Number seven, in South Dakota, 43.4% of available of the population is rural. 99.7% of the available land in South Dakota is rural. Kentucky comes in at number eight. 41% lives out in the country. Available rural land in Kentucky is 96.4%. Alabama, which I can get to kind of quick from here. I had to drive 3 hours in one direction and hit Route 10, but parts of Florida they call Lower Alabama. Matter of fact, where I have my land is Yeah, part of that might be called Lower Alabama or South Georgia. In any event, 41% of the population of Alabama lives in a rural situation. 95.6% of available land in Alabama is rural land. And in North Dakota is number 10. Now, these are the most rural states in the United States. Number 10 is North Dakota. 40.1% of the population they live in the country. And the available landmass in North Dakota is 99.7%. Now, let me pull out some other statistics here. Let's see. North Dakota, New Hampshire. And just look at, you know, your particular state and look for, just punch in any search engine, what's the available landmass for rural land, what is the available percent, put in what's the percentage of rural land available in whatever state that you might be interested in. Okay. But matter of fact, you know what? North Carolina popped up last week. Let me see if I can find it here. Percentage. I just got a postcard from somebody selling land in North Carolina. Percentage of rural land in North Carolina. Okay, how much farmland does North Carolina have? The state has 8.4 million acres of 8.4 acres of land has been classified as agricultural. That's 27% of the land's area. They have a total of 46,000 farms in North Carolina. How many acres are right? Okay, so that's impressive, man. 46,000. There are 46,000 farms in North Carolina. But I want to find out the available landmass. 8.4 million acres of farmland. Well, put it this way. 8.4 acres of land that has been zoned agricultural, that's what we have in North Carolina. And that's farmland. I was trying to find the number for rural land. It's in here somewhere. But for right now, but we'll have to do more homework on that. Let's see. How many acres of land in North Carolina? All right, statewide, there's 33. Okay, I got to get these figures right. Let's see. I'm going to go state by state on this. But, all right, how much farmland is available in North Carolina? 8.4 million acres. So there's something to work with. Okay, well, that's about all I have. We're going to bring up more information as the weeks go by on land availability, where to go buy it, and in all the places, all the states that I name, none of the high-profile crime. You know what's interesting? All the places where people have been shot and killed, particularly black men, from Trayvon Martin to Eric Gardner to Mike Brown, et cetera, George Floyd, you notice none of that was in the country. None of those events happened in a rural area. Now, I'm not saying that the crime does happen in rural areas now, but I'm just saying, statistically, it's safer, particularly for a black man, in my opinion, you can disagree with me again if you want, to be in a rural area. The cost of living, you might have to pick up some new skill sets. I'm picking up new skill sets. But I think you have more opportunity. All right, so. All right, that's my little thing on the club, 14%. If you're in Chicago or someplace and you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you might want to consider moving to Maine or Montana or Arkansas. Now, there's some stuff that happens. Let's take Arkansas. Little Rock has a reputation for crime. But who says you had to live in Little Rock? There's a documentary on YouTube, pretty interesting. It's called Banging in Little Rock. And it's about gang activity that was happening in Little Rock, Arkansas. But you don't have to live in Little Rock, Arkansas. Matter of fact, we need to bring Darlene Lewis because she knows that neck of the woods and what happened with Banging in. I think Pleasant Stephens has got, he's got a bunch of land out that way. He lives in Chicago, though. But he does go visit, and I think his wife is from Mound Bayou, Mississippi, which has an abundance of land. Okay. So, any comments, 619-768-2945. You want to comment on anything, got a topic that you want to discuss, or if you want to comment on what we've been talking about, the availability of land that exists. Because my whole thing is, why march and struggle and all this other stuff? Go to a land. You know what? All those places that I just named are promised lands. And all the places where a lot of these people are trying to get reparations is what I would classify as Egypt. You're not going to get anywhere in Egypt. You're going to have to live in Egypt represented comfort and convenience. Those slaves represent, because that's what those slaves in Old Testament, they had the comfort and convenience. As soon as they gotten out, in that wilderness or whatnot, a lot of them were griping and complaining. They were getting hungry. They said, well, at least we wouldn't starve in Egypt. Chicago, D.C., New York, L.A., San Diego, Miami, Dallas. Those places, for some people, that's your Egypt. Your promised land is in these rural areas. Now, in these promised lands, you're going to have to get out. You're going to have to develop some skill sets. There's not going to be a Whole Foods in your promised land until you get out there and build one up yourself. But food for thought. Out of all these high-profile murders, none of them took place in a rural area. I can think of possibly one. They made a movie about it. It was some years ago. This black dude somewhere in Texas, he was walking down the road, and that probably was could have been a suburban area, but and somebody that he knew stopped and offered, long story short, him, the white dude, and his two other buddies who happened to be white, they tied this dude up and then dragged him to his death. And I don't know if that was in the rural area. But other than that, and I'm going to have to do my homework on that one, Trayvon Martin, all these, George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Mike Brown, Eric Gardner, you name it. What's that, the young lady in Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky? Every one of those happened in densely populated areas. Every one of them. You're safer in Nome, Alaska. Cost of living is going to be higher up there, but, you know, if you got the skill set, you can buy some cheap land up in Alaska. But you can also do it in Mississippi, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, Maine. There's plenty of it. Okay, well, I guess that's enough of my rant for today. All right, nobody else is. We got people listening, but nobody raising their hand. So, if you haven't camped, I would suggest go camping. You might find a quiet little spot. Matter of fact, you know what? Before I sign off, I'm in Florida. Let's see. Percentage of rural land in Florida. What's it is where I'm at? I'm not looking for how much vacant land is in Florida. Well, let me look that up. They say roughly, all right, 300,000 acres of vacant land in Florida. But, percentage of rural land in Florida. That's what I'm looking for. Let's see. Florida is among the top five states in the country with the most undeveloped land for sale. There's roughly 300,000 acres of undeveloped land for sale in Florida based on recent Lands of America data, making it the most common type of land for sale in Florida. 300,000 acres. Now, Florida has, we have 67 counties here in Florida. Let me see. Okay, let me do some quick math here. All right, 300,000 acres of vacant land, they say, or undeveloped, and divided by 67 counties here in Florida. So there are 4,477 acres of land if you put it out by county. You know, in Florida, once you get outside of Jacksonville, the Tampa Bay metro area, Orlando metro area, Dade County, where you got Fort Lauderdale and Miami, Palm Beach County, which is above that Dade, and then Naples, in Southwest Florida, in Tallahassee. Once you get outside of those five areas in Florida, man, basically it's just cows. Every day, like, if I'm sitting right now, if I went out my front door, you know, down the driveway and walk across the street to my across-the-street neighbor, which will take me on a normal walk under a minute, maybe 30 seconds. Let's say a minute. Just taking my time walking. A slow walk, 1 minute. In the morning and afternoon, I see cows and horses every day. Now, on my side of the street, it looks normal. It's developed like a subdivision on a little bit over a quarter acre, but everybody's got privacy fence. But I see cows and horses every day. But you get outside. But I'm part of the, I guess, this is like Tampa Bay metro area. I'm on the fringes of that. But once you, outside of those five areas that I talked about in Florida, when Florida's got 67 counties, Florida's, man, is basically rural. Country. You know. Oh, let me take this call real quick. I get hit my studio. Let me open up 410 area code. Your mic is open. 410, mic is open. You might have yourself on mute. Okay, wait a minute. Let me do it this way.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
How do you go about finding all of this vacant property out there?
Basically, I've done it two ways. I ran across my first 4 acres after I lost out on a real estate transit. The lady decided to take her house off the market in Jacksonville, Florida. So something told me, you know what, I always wanted some land. So I went online looking, and the original task was to get 10 acres and partner up with somebody from, you know, the It's My House family. But then when I got there, the guy, it was a family guy. It was a little family firm. He showed me around, and he showed me 4 acres, which cost less money and, you know, a lot easier to manage, too. So that's how I got my first 4 acres. And that, I would say the best way is, you know, go driving around in the country or something. And, you know, if you, particularly these little small towns, man, you know, get to know the mayor or something like that. And I've gotten 2 pieces of property in the country that way. But there's a lot for sale online. But whatever you find, and at reasonable prices, but I find you can get the best prices. A lot of the best prices don't even hit offline. There's so much of it out there. The 10 acres that I got in Texas, I got that off eBay.
Okay. Because now when you go on eBay, someone more or less owns that property. So you're buying
right.
it from someone. I was just
you're
looking at
it from
all of
someone.
This. Yeah, well, all this land that you're talking about is not owned. It's just out there somewhere, isn't it?
That's a good, you know, it's some kind of way the government's got his hand in all that. But a lot of, like, for instance, the place where there's a lot of counties like this in the United States. There's a lot of small counties, all right, as far as population-wise in the United States. Some of these counties might have 1 or 2 towns, maybe 3 towns. There's a whole bunch of counties in the United States that have 1 town. And a lot of land's just sitting there that you can buy from the county.
Well, now, I looked up all my land, and I told you how many acres I had. And
right.
My father bought a lot of land through county courthouse auctions.
Mm-hmm.
But There used to be a standard practice around here that white people used. It used to be a ritual. They'd come into the courthouse every Monday morning, and what they do is they go over the property maps,
right,
and find out, you know, exactly who owned what. And I used to do that in my spare time, but I was working at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some property that I purchased, but it was right next to my land, and
right.
It was unclaimed land. And I asked the girl, which I shouldn't have done. I should have already known it, but we black folks are always late to the dance. And what happened is, when I looked at it on a computer, all the claim land had green boundary lines
mm-hmm.
to show the boundaries. But this particular piece of land had a red boundary line around it. And I asked the girl in the map office, what did that mean? She says, let me check it out. And it was land that had been unclaimed. And it was 4 acres. And what happened is I had a conference I had to attend. And I asked her, I said, well, look, can I get that land? She says, all you need to do is come up with a quick claim deed. Which I still didn't know what she was talking about. And she says, what you do is pay the taxes on it, and it's yours. So what happened is I went home to get my wife to get the land
mm-hmm.
because I had a conference I had to attend. And what happened is she was supposed to have gotten the land, but she didn't get it because I figured I was the only one that had discovered it. So what happened is, she didn't get it. She said she was scared to mess with it because it might belong to somebody, and she didn't want no trouble and all of this stuff. Well, I couldn't leave the conference because I had to do a presentation. So what happened is when I did get a chance to leave the conference, someone had already claimed the land. I thought
well,
you had
plenty,
a formula.
There's plenty more out there, though, Beasley.
I just didn't know whether you had a formula for finding these properties or not, you know.
Now, the way I told you I got the first 4 acres, then when I was out in Oklahoma in this particular town, I knew the mayor. We're talking about less than 300 people, 50 people lived there. So she knew everybody, and a lot of people, you know, have walked away for land, you know, relatives.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, now I'm going to tell you, Labor Day weekend, Memorial Day weekend, when a lot of people go back home, that's a good time to find out who owns a piece of land that they're not doing anything with, and you can pick up on the cheap.
Okay.
Believe it or
okay.
not.
Yeah.
I picked up my first house in Oklahoma that way. I was looking at another house, but it was the family had moved from Oklahoma to Atlanta. It was 3 siblings, and they all moved to Atlanta. Okay, and it was a nice house, family house with, you know, mementos. You know, the dad was a principal of the school there at that town and all that. And so now in my mind I'm thinking, man, with three siblings, only takes one of them to be greedy to knock things out of the box. So I had a meeting set up. This is Memorial Day weekend. I don't know, maybe about 7 years ago, something like that. No. Yeah, 6 or 7 years ago. So, I was trying to give concessions, because I really wanted it. But then I told the lady, because she was there with her cousin who had nothing to do with it, I said, you know what, I'll get back to you later. Because I knew of another house in that same town, and I only had to deal with one person. I went back to my motel room and called that person up and said, look, you still interested in selling that place? She said, yes. I said, I'll go to your lawyer tomorrow, after the late, because that was Memorial Day weekend. I went there Tuesday, signed the papers, left with the deed. But on Memorial Day weekend, when, like I said, a lot of people go home. You know, it's reunion time in a lot of places.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of black folks have, they've walked away from it.
Well,
I was just fortunate that she kept up the taxes, so I didn't have to worry about that part of it.
Right.
But it was free and clear. So I asked her what she wanted for it. I already said, I'll pay your price. She offered financing on it. So she acted as the bank. And, you can do a lot of that. And that kind of stuff doesn't even hit the Internet.
No, no. Well, you know, the stuff that I got, I just stumbled on it by accident.
Mm-hmm.
And like
right.
I said before, my father used to go to these courthouse auctions and bid on the stuff. But, you know, my thing is that, you know, I was just listening to you, and I guess there's a lot of land out there you probably can get that's been unclaimed. I just didn't know
run across the family that, man, they've been in business for like 35, 40 years. They've done over 10,000 transactions. It's a whole family. The man, he's retired now, his wife, and then his son's running now, one of his daughters, and son-in-law. It's about,
I need to give you more.
5 or 6 of them,
okay.
That's it. And then I ran across a guy, he lives in Pennsylvania, but he, his wife, and a couple of daughters or whatever, man, they done bought, like, God knows, over 4,000 properties in Texas. They did the exact same thing you're talking about. They just go to the county and see what's available and pick it up that way. And then they resell it for God knows. I bought my first 4 acres for 24 acres. I mean, for $24,000. Man, but he probably paid about $2,000 or $3,000 for that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I haven't done it lately, but that's the thing I'm going to start doing is just going to these courthouse auctions. But I was able to get 10 acres last year. But the thing is...
Now, let me ask you this. I'm not going to ask the city. But all right, hold it. The big metro areas up there in North Carolina, you got Raleigh, Durham, and what's the other big? Oh, Charlotte. Was it outside of those three big metro areas?
Yeah, Eastern Carolina is mostly rural.
Okay.
I'm in Eastern North Carolina. It's mostly rural.
All right. Now, what about the western part of the state? What's that like?
It's probably western rural, too, but I've only been there on vacation. I haven't really done any digging into it, but those mountain areas. It's
right,
mountainous.
Smoky Mountains and all that? Okay.
Yeah, and all of that stuff, but... I'm quite sure, well, it's mostly rural, but I'm quite sure that those people probably sell it to you for a pretty good price, but I don't think those people are going to sell. They might.
Well, you already got a method, Beasley. Like, you got the method that, because I'm sure when you were down there looking at that at the courthouse, there wasn't a whole lot of people in front of you or behind you.
Well, they were interested in some other stuff. The land that I got, really, they didn't want. So I was able to get it at a good price. But
yeah, because 10 acres is a good chunk of land.
Yeah, it is. Well, what happened?
Yeah, that's 10 football fields.
Yeah, it had been abandoned by the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got some swamp marshland around it, too. So that's why I was able to get it dirt cheap.
Okay.
You know, but the thing
Disney
is,
World down this way used to be swampland.
Yeah, but they had a lot of money to improve it, though. But,
well, that's true. Disney did have that.
And then you have to do it. Well, back when Disney got that, I don't know how it works in Florida now, but up here in North Carolina, if you're going to try and improve the land and it's got some marshy areas around it, you got to do an environmental impact study.
You got to do that practically everywhere you go now. And that can cost, what, $20,000, $25,000 or more?
At least.
Now, what I've heard about North Carolina is, number one, it's they have a lot of mobile home parks, which I consider a good source of cash flow if you're in the mobile homes. So it sounds like North Carolina. I was telling a friend of mine, she moved from Las Vegas to the D.C. area, Silver Spring. And I told her, I said, because she made a side trip to North Carolina, I said, you might want to take a look at the mobile home opportunities in North Carolina. Not the new ones, but the older ones.
Yeah. Well, what happened is in these rural areas now, the county I live in, the population dropped by 21%. In these rural areas, you don't have any way for these young folk to make a living. So what they do is they go to the Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill area after they get out of school to find work.
Right.
But now back in the day when I was growing up, I had a chance to buy 18 acres. I had just gotten out of the military, and I had the money. And what happened is, if you got the time, a guy came from New York and bought a little beer joint from a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is it was across the street from that beer joint was a lot of white families.
Okay.
And you know how black folks do when we start drinking and everything around a joint. They were raising sand and cussing and everything. So after a few calls to the sheriff and the guy found out he couldn't do anything about it, he wanted to sell the property. And I had the money. But all I saw was a two-story house. It had an upper and a lower story. It was an old farmhouse. And I just didn't, at that time I was single and I was running the street and getting high and everything.
Right.
And the guy that owned the club across the street from the so-called house turned out to be 18 acres. So what he did, Brother L.A., he tried doing feeder pigs first. That didn't work.
Right.
To try and get some out of the land. Then the notion came up some kind of way somebody put a bug in his ear and said, look, why don't you put up a trailer park? And he had, I think it was about 50 trailer parks on that 18 acres. And he put them all on Section 8.
He was making
bank. And the thing is, at that time, I think he was getting something from the range of $15,000 to $20,000 a month, one check.
Man.
And
see,
I,
the
I
places looked, like that is what I call the real United States.
Yeah. But the thing is, Brother L.A., you know what? I kicked myself in the butt because, hey, I had the money.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, by me being young and not knowing what was going on, I could have used the house myself because I was living with my parents.
Right.
But I look at, on the bright side, if I had gotten it, a whole lot of people wouldn't have had a place to live because I wouldn't have never thought of a trailer park. But that's the kind of stuff that went on.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know now. So if you wanted if you wanted to do something like that, only thing is there's still a place where you can do that. It's just in certain areas, you know, zoning is popping in. But there's a lot of counties around the United States that don't have code enforcement, and you can basically do what you want to do without a permit.
Well, that's all of Eastern North Carolina.
Okay.
They don't have any zoning or anything like that. You do have a building inspector, but other than that, you don't have any zoning around here because it's all woodland or either farmland or open open areas.
Right, I go for land that's zoned agriculture. I don't want nothing zoned residential. Places like that, matter of fact, there's a young lady, she's in a mobile home. She done got her income, she might be doing about $25,000 a month, and she just started doing mobile homes like 2 years ago.
Yeah, you can make the money. The only bad thing about mobile homes.
She's out of, I don't know her personally or nothing. I just follow some of her videos on YouTube. I'll send you some in a few after I get off the air. She's out of Burlington, North Carolina.
Yeah, okay. Well, Burlington, the land should be real cheap because all of those furniture factories have relocated. You can go there and get some property around there for a song and a dance.
All right. And I know of a guy, all I know is his first name. I think Rich Mitchell or something like that. He was down in southern Florida. Man, he moved his family up to North Carolina. I forgot, I just talked to that dude last week. I got to call him again this week and find out what part of North Carolina. But he left South Florida, which could be expensive. And he moved out. Matter of fact, he moved in either early this year or late last year, December, somewhere around there. So he loves North Carolina. I've only passed through. The last time I spent any kind of time in North Carolina was 2 days, maybe about 5 years ago, and that was in Durham. I was over at North Carolina Central University. So I didn't get out into, you know, the rural areas there.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at going down to Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing here for me to do.
Now you can buy some cheap land in Georgia.
Yeah, and I got some friends down there. My wife got some friends down there too. So I'm thinking about getting something there. You know, I want to get close to Atlanta if possible. But I don't want to be in Atlanta. I just want to be where I can drive into it and drive out. But
I don't know much about there, but probably within about 60-mile radius of Atlanta, you can probably find some affordable land.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing.
Because
you're not the first person I heard talking about going to Atlanta. Matter of fact, there was a YouTuber that I think she's originally from Alabama. She went over to Gambia. She had relocated over to Gambia, but I don't know what happened over there. I don't know if they ran her out of Gambia or whatever. But now she's promoting land in Georgia. She's got a website called, what's it called? Black Land Flippers, blacklandflippers.com. But I'm sure whatever she's selling it for, you can find a gazillion places around Georgia where you can buy it cheaper.
Yeah, well, those are my plans. I'm going to see what happens here, and then I got some stuff I got to sell. In fact, I got some property I'm going to turn over to my sister and her family because I got to get it out of Ayers' property, and I'm going to just let her have it because there's nobody but me and my wife and a dog. So,
okay.
You know, I'm – but I just found it intriguing, this program you had, how you were talking about there's a lot of land out here unclaimed, and I just needed it. Let me move for these people.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Breeze. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Bye.